I was sent an email stating that the district is looking at how they might change the way the minutes are presented in the public on the website. I think the minutes should be presented in its entirety in written form on the website. To encapsulate these minutes can exclude details that I might find germane to my concerns on the topic presented. Also, by arbitrarily deciding what is needed to be encapsulated form, it becomes censorship. I'm sure that is an unintended consequence, but a consequence nonetheless. I realize the recordings in their entirety will also be presented, offered on the website. I agree with that, but I don't think recordings should supplant the written form. They both carry their own values and their own needs. The written form is good for people to have the ability to digest the topics at hand in a more satisfactory time in their own individual needs. Topics at hand in a manner, in a more satisfactory time in their own individual needs. So, in conclusion, I'm asking you to rethink staff suggestions for presenting the minutes on the district website. Thank you for your time. Okay.
Anybody else have a public comment? If none, we'll move on to the public hearing. And Herb, you're going to start the introduction. Our CEO, Herb Schultz.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good evening. How is everyone tonight?
Good.
Hot.
How is everyone tonight?
Great!
My role this evening is just to give you a little bit of a primer. Many of you, we know, many of you are new, and to give you a little primer on who the district and the foundation is, and what we're going to do tonight, and then introduce you to Dr. Justin Levitt, who is, where did I just see him? There he is, sitting right there. It'll do the bulk of this. Less talking by us and far more input for you. So let me just see, how many of you live in Desert Hot Springs? Okay, who is in Palm Springs, Cathedral City, Rancho Mirage, Palm Desert?
Palms.
Anywhere else?
Thousand Palms.
Thousand
Palms.
I live in Indio. Indio?
Quinta.
Mayor of La Quinta. So what I wanted just to briefly go through is the mission and the vision of, the English and Spanish versions. So the mission is optimal health for all of the residents of the district. And we are going to be talking about tonight, I know some people have been asking questions about the potential future. So the district as it currently stands, and I'll talk about that, we're not talking tonight about the potential expansion of the district. We're talking about transitioning from at-large districts where five board members run and serve the entire district to moving into what we call zone-based elections, or five zones. So the mission, and what we like to say about the vision is that the district, the foundation, does not provide health or healthcare services. What we do is connect residents, Coachella Valley residents, to health and wellness services through using our dollars to fund worthwhile projects, community-based organizations, provider organizations, many of them here. As you know, there's the Health and Wellness Center here in DHS, and many of our school-based programs are here. So not a direct provider. So 70 years old, five-member board, and the way that the district is largely funded is anyone that's a property owner, you pay 1% that goes to Riverside. 70 years ago, the people of the five cities and the unincorporated areas said, we want to take a little bit of that back. So it's your money that you give to Riverside, that comes back for the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation to provide grants and other things to all of you and the organizations. I said what cities are involved: Desert Hot Springs, Palm Springs, Cathedral City, Rancho, part of Palm Desert, a little bit of Indian Wells, and unincorporated areas that are growing and big like Thousand Pines. One of the largest funders of health and wellness services in the valley. It's been $70 million. And we, on behalf of you, the residents of the district board, on behalf of the public, owns the buildings of Desert Regional Medical Center. But the district does not operate the hospital. That is operated by the Tenet Healthcare Corporation on contract, but the district board, three of whom are here tonight, have an oversight function and make sure that the care that's being provided is top-notch for the community. So, this is what we're going to be talking about tonight. So, as you can see, this is the current district. We're not going to be talking about the potential expansion. But right now, you have five elected board members, as we said, that serve the entire area. And so the transition is to take basically the current district and carve it up to five districts. So five zones, as we call them. And so when Justin comes up, he'll be talking with you about your neighborhoods, your communities of interest, and a lot of what we want to evoke tonight is, you know, where do you live now? Are there neighborhoods around you that you think that has to be in my zone? Or is that different from us as we carve out five zone-based districts? So here's the strategic priorities, and I'm just going to go through them really quickly because this is the one Coachella Valley that we're trying to do later in the year, but the current and hopefully the future. A lot of the areas that the board has deemed as community health focus areas, and that's it. So, sorry, Justin, to that. So were there any general questions? Because what Justin is with the National Demographics Corporation, and he and his colleagues are the contractors that are working on behalf of the district board and the community. So this is the second of two meetings where we get to evoke from you information about your communities of interest, who you think should be with your neighbors in each of these districts. And he'll walk you through these various zones. And it's a little bit technical, we know it, but we have maps that are easily sort of drawn. There will be two other public meetings, and those meetings will be in June, but those will be after the district publishes proposed options so that we can get your feedback. Like, ultimately, there will be 3 to 5 maps, and the district board will look for your input on, where is Desert Hot Springs? Where is Cathedral City? Where is Rancho? Is Palm Springs too big to be one district? Should it be carved in half? Shouldn't it be? And those are all the issues, again, we wanted to go from you. So I'm going to turn it over to Justin, who's going to explain the process and try to pull you out for some input.
Well, thank you for that introduction, and thank you to all of you who came here tonight to listen to this presentation. I've already been introduced, but just to reiterate, my name is Dr. Dustin Levitt, and I've worked with National Demographics Corporation. We've been involved with over 100 redistricting or drawing districts for changing district-based elections, including the city of Cathedral City just last year. And we're really happy to be out here today to kind of guide you through this transition, which, we really want to focus in is that it's not a change of the board's responsibility. The board continues to serve all the residents of the entire district. It just is a change in the way that they're elected to office. I really want to emphasize that their responsibility doesn't change as a result of this switch in the electoral system. And this switches from this at-large system, which we've talked about, where you elect, or you will have a vote on all five board members. And they're kind of, they can reside anywhere within the district, to this third system, by district or by zone elections, where each representative has to live within a specific geographic area and is directly accountable to the voters in that geographic area. This is a system we should be very familiar with because it's how we already elect members of Congress, State Assembly, State Senate, Board of Supervisors, and many other district, many other elections that we already have throughout the state. Now we often get questions about this middle one, this from zone or residence zone. This is where board members have to reside within an area, but the general election for them is held throughout the district. This one, compared to by zone elections, this actually can lead to people who live in a particular area being somebody being represented by somebody who's not the preferred candidate of that neighborhood. And so in terms of most accurate form of representation, the best form of representation, by zone election offers this direct connection between the voters in a particular neighborhood or community and who represents them on board. Now, kind of going into this timeline, and we'll hold questions like that for the end, but please hold on to them. We would love to get all these, make sure to write them all down and know what these questions and concerns are. This is the second public hearing. State law requires us to hold these two public hearings to take testimony before we even put the pen on the map. So right now, we don't have any lines that are already drawn, any lines that are already proposed. It's a blank map of the district right now. And what we're looking to gather here tonight is your input on where we should start drawing, how we should draw these different five different trustee areas, five different zones throughout the entire district. Now, this is the second of these hearings. On June 19th, our third public hearing, we'll actually have maps. We'll have 3 to 5 draft concepts to show you. And you'll be able to view them a week before on the website, because we're required to post the draft maps at least a week before. So on June 12th, district's website will be updated with 3 to 5 draft maps from National Demographics, in addition to any maps we get from members of the public. The board will discuss these maps, the community will discuss these maps on June 19th, and again on June 26th. June 19th will be at UC Riverside Palm Desert Campus, 6 p.m. On June 26th, it will be at the Sturgio's building at the Desert Healthcare District offices in Palm Springs. Both of these meetings will take place at 6 p.m. On the 26th, the board will select one of these maps. Perhaps it won't even be one of the original maps presented on the 19th, but we can make changes, we can update, we can make them, we can improve them between that first map or post, you know, the third public hearing and the fourth public hearing. And so what this means is that the first election held in zone elections will be held in November 2018 in two of the areas. And then in 2020, the remaining three areas will hold their by-zone elections. Now, you know, I'm not going to get into the issues of what happens with the annexation, if it passes or doesn't pass, but moving forward where we are now, if the annexation did not proceed, this is exactly what would happen. You would have two zones up for election in 2018 and three zones up for election in 2020. Either way, in 2021, we are going to get new census data, and we're going to have to redraw the zone boundaries so that their population balance to make them equal in terms of the number of people living in them to reflect the growth in the district. And that's actually the number one most important districting criteria. Districts have to have the same number of people, and this includes everybody counted in the 2010 census. This includes non-citizens, this includes children, everybody, not just voters, everyone counts toward this total population number. We take this population number, we divide it by 5 to get the ideal population for each zone, which is about 39,400. In addition to equal population, the courts tell us we also have to care about or concern ourselves with the Voting Rights Act. And while race cannot be the only factor we consider, or even the predominant factor, it must be one of many factors we take into account as part of drawing these district boundaries. And so what we're going to be looking at here is looking at groups that have historically faced discrimination or barriers in registration and voting, and where we have majorities, where we have concentrations or neighborhoods, or other sorts of communities of those populations. And that really takes us into the traditional redistricting criteria on the right-hand side, communities of interest. You know, communities of interest is often one of the toughest ones to explain, so kind of have a slide to it by itself. But because communities of interest vary. I mean, I've been to 100 cities, 100 school districts. It's different in every single one. Because what matters in a city council district may not be exactly what matters for a healthcare zone. But at its bottom line, the core of what communities of interest are things that bring people together. Shared communities, shared neighborhoods, one council member once put it, shared problems. People who face the same issues. And because those issues can be different in one end of a district than they are in another area. For example, think about the way that roads might vary depending on which city you're living in, depending on which ambulance company serves as part of or this area or another area in the district, what kind of interaction there is between the local schools and the healthcare district. And we throw these out of ideas, but we really want your help in identifying what the appropriate communities of interest are and how they should be represented. Because one thing we have to ask, not just what are your communities of interest, but do they want to be united or divided? A lot of times we get larger communities, for example, a city, you know, say 39,400 people is ideal. Let's say we have a city of 60,000. They might say we have to be divided up. So let's be divided up in a way that puts 30,000 of us in each district rather than packing us into one and having a few people in another. So does a community want to be kept entirely together? Or does it want to be divided between the two so that there are two board members that are responsible to that city, that neighborhood, or that community? Now, in addition to communities of interest, we also look at the shape of the district, compactness, contiguity, both refer to this, the geography of the district. Are we following natural boundaries? Are we following lines that make sense on the ground? Major roads, for example, keeping subdivisions intact? Or are we going right through the middle neighborhoods? And if so, is there a reason for doing that? For example, to make sure that that neighborhood has two representatives. And we really want your help in, again, identifying which neighborhoods, which streets are good to use as boundaries. Is Interstate 10 a boundary? Or is it something where people who live on both sides of the interstate need to have common representatives? Maybe it shouldn't be used as a boundary. In addition, we look at growth. As I mentioned, you know, we're going to be doing this again just in a couple of years here with the new data for the 2020 census. We know that the district has grown in terms of its population just since 2010. Sure. And so where has it grown more? Where has it not grown more? We can take that into account in recognizing that growth itself may be a community of interest. New communities and historic communities may have different needs. My only point is respecting the voters' wishes. This is the idea that districting is sort of, you know, shouldn't be used as a target, to target a particular member of the board, that it should minimize the impact on residents of the district to the extent possible. So all of these put together are things we want to consider as this right-hand column, traditional criteria, things that we have to balance and figure out what's important. And that's where we want you to help us understand what's important to you. When we look at the Voting Rights Act, one of the things we look at is not just not just race and ethnicity, but all demographics of this. And we have a full-page spreadsheet on the back if you want to look at this in more detail. But it kind of highlights just all the fact, you know, all the factors that we consider in every process. This is a starting point. This isn't an ending point. But it does give you some of the many things that we consider when drawing district lines. Not just race and ethnicity, but age, ability to speak English or Spanish or other languages at home, education, income, renters versus owners. You know, in one case, I remember one city came down to newer neighborhoods and older neighborhoods, and that was something that we had to look into because that was an important dividing line between different communities. And so we really want your help. Tell us what we should be looking at and focusing on here. One thing we can see is that Latinos make up 40% of the total population and 20% of the eligible voters. That's people over the age of 18 who are U.S. citizens. That's something that we often see in a lot of districts and jurisdictions where Latino population will be much higher, substantially higher, than eligible voting population. And that actually matters because the Voting Rights Act tells us that we need to use the eligible voting number to make determinations. One of the things that we look at then is where do we see neighborhoods or areas that have a higher Latino percentage of the population than average? And when looking at it, we see two neighborhoods. We see in Central Cathedral City and in the Desert Hot Springs, the unincorporated areas around Desert Hot Springs have higher than average Latino populations. And so these are two neighborhoods that we want to think about as we're starting to draw lines. Keeping together and trying to understand to what extent is there a community in both of those neighborhoods. In addition, we look at our Native American reservations. Even though the Native American population is on the smaller side, Native American reservations do make up a good larger percentage of the area, simply the area on the ground. And it cuts right into Palm Springs, Cathedral City, even Rancho Mirage, Palm Desert, have pieces of the Aguinaldo Reservation. And so how that bisects, how that divides those cities, maybe something that you want to consider or think about throughout the process. So we open it up here today to get your opinions and to start hearing from you about what these communities of interest are. What should we be considering when we start drawing district boundaries? So in a few seconds here, we're going to be opening it up to public comment and debate. The more specifics you can give us, the better. Tell us which streets. Tell us which subdivisions or neighborhoods. Let us do the hard work of finding them on the map. And if maybe today you're not ready to start drawing anything out, but you just want to listen, we also have online on the district's website a place or a PDF you can download. It's sort of like a public participation kit that includes a map of the district with some of the rough populations of the different cities that make up that are included. We encourage you to draw right on this and take a picture of it, send it to us, turn it in at the district office. We're happy to take it any way you have. And draw on it. Tell us where your community of interest is.
Justin, could you read the populations for the cities there so that the idea of what you're talking about?
Sure. So, I would say, Desert Hot Springs itself, this is just the city of Desert Hot Springs, has a population of 25,938 people. The unincorporated areas around Desert Hot Springs to the north have 1,755 people. And to the south, that's the Garnet area, according to what the census calls it, 14,023 people living in it. The Sky Valley area, kind of out toward the east, as we're going to be heading out toward Thousand Palms, has 2,406 people. Thousand Palms itself has 7,587 people. So 7,587 people. And I emphasize, these are 2010 census numbers. These may not be the current numbers, because I know there's been some development throughout the districts here. Palm Springs has a population of 44,552. And Cathedral City has a population of 51,200. Rancho Mirage has a population of 17,218. And the portion of Palm Desert that's in the district, this isn't all of Palm Desert, it's just Palm Desert west of Cook Avenue. And that's 30,239 people. In addition, there's a small population in the south. There's 745 people in Indian Wells, basically the part of Indian Wells also west of Cook. And the unincorporated south area, there's a couple of unincorporated little neighborhoods that are south along 74 down toward the south end of the county, has just shy of 1,000 people at 976 residents. And so in actually south of Palm Springs, the unincorporated area there has 245 people living there as well. So these are rough ideas. I like to say on these maps, you can kind of tell how many people each neighborhood has by how many streets there are. So areas where you see that there's a lot of streets are very densely populated. Areas where you see it more spread out tend to have fewer people over that same area of space. Yeah. All right, what we should do now is, I think we want to turn it up to questions. So I know a couple people who want to raise questions. We have...
Alejandro's going to take the mic around.
And please state your name and what city you're from.
I'm sorry.
So we're asking people to say what your name is, what city you're from, and read that for your question.
Richard Finn from Desert Hot Springs. So I'm looking at this stuff. I'm looking at this demographic profile, and I really don't care about the voter registration. You know, because that's just redistricts, and I understand that. But I don't see anything about veterans here. Where's the demographic? We're part of the community. Desert Hot Springs, we got over 3,000 people. Is our health not important? You know, I don't see any of that on there. You know, I understand what's going on. But are we going to, because we're one of the most underserved areas in the country for veterans, so and services. So I think it's very, very important to keep in mind when you're redistricting this area. So,
good question.
Thank you for your comment. I'll mention that that is something we have included before on those spreadsheets.
Okay.
It's not on there. Take a look, because we normally include veteran status on there.
Hey.
Thank you.
Oh, I just want, excuse me, Marjorie Holland. I'm with the Desert Holly Gateway Wellness Committee, and I just wanted to let this gentleman know that that's one of our worthy calls.
Okay.
There's a list of about five worthy calls, and the veterans is on the list.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Alejandro Hank has as well.
I'm coming from Adrian's here. So what I was wondering is the reality when you're cutting the lines of redistricting, obviously you're going to be looking at, let me put it this way. The concern I would have is I would want the area of Desert Hot Springs to be represented by someone who knows the community. But when we're doing the lines, we're looking at population, but then we also have the voter population, which does impact the way that community is going to be represented. So I know no lines have been drawn or anything yet, and I know that for other gerrymandering things, bad gerrymandering obstacles. My concern is when these lines are drawn, I would like to make sure that the community of Palm Springs, the community of Desert Hot Springs, these five district area communities will be served by the popular vote of that community, not where the lines are drawn, where we know the higher percentage, even though we may have a lot of registered voters in Desert Hot Springs, say only 10% of those votes, of those registered voters vote. But in Palm Springs, they have a high, you know, they have this, okay, so say we do 20,000 in each community, that gives us the 39,000. I got my Desert Hot Springs, 20,000 of those people, and then I have 20,000 people of northern Palm Springs, plus more of Palm Springs, but the majority of Palm Springs, those people are more active voters than the 20,000 of the Desert Hot Springs voters. Therefore, I'm afraid that district, even the way it's drawn, is supposed to represent that community, won't really represent Desert Hot Springs. Am I communicating well? Am I getting my point across? Because I really didn't plan on presenting this, but you know what I mean? It's something to look at. It's just something to look at when you're drawing the lines and not monitoring.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. It can be a concern because the distribution of voters may not be the same as the distribution of people.
Right, and that's the concern when you're doing these district lines, is the distribution of voters.
Yeah, so it's...
I mean, I wish everybody was voting, but unfortunately, that's not the reality.
Justin, but aren't there rules as to how, what we can take into consideration?
Sure, so we can totally take that into consideration if that was the direction that we could get, like if we wanted to. We can't guarantee that there's the same number.
But I'm not looking for guarantees, I'm just looking for awareness.
If you know, if you're specifically concerned that, you'd like to see a district where the number of voters that come out of Desert Hot Springs is greater than the number of voters that come out of anywhere else, at least one district
to address this gentleman.
That would be something that would be a great feedback that we can take. Basically, as you're saying, keep Desert Hot Springs together. Because if we start looking at Desert Hot Springs and look at the unincorporated communities next to it, especially just, that are really a part of Desert Hot Springs in some ways, you're basically at the population of a district.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering. That would make it a no-brainer for that part.
Yeah.
Then I'm sure you get into, and I don't live in these areas, I'm sure that's going to get into the other areas where they're going to be saying, wait, Palm Springs has 30. We want to make sure we're represented, that we want to make sure we got our cluster voted.
And so it's like,
so that's going to be a headache for you guys to decide, but I want it to be there, to be noted.
What I take out of your comment, and so I want to get what everyone has to say in their own unfiltered words, but what I take out of that comment is, draw a district that keeps Desert Hot Springs together.
Yeah.
That doesn't have too many voters or residents or anything, people.
That's going to influence it from another district.
But really, a Desert Hot Springs.
This different area.
Just once. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, Jarvis Crawford, Desert Island Health and Wellness Committee, and also Desert Hot Springs resident. My question is for the five proposed zones that we'll have. Will there be five board members per zone, or will the board members still be the same? There'll be one board member per zone.
Correct.
And that'll make up how the board is.
Correct.
And the board member will have to live in the zone.
In that city.
That zone.
In that zone. In that zone, in the zone.
Okay.
And this is just what we see here. It's not going past to Indio or
correct.
Bermuda Dunes. This is right here. This is
yes, this is the current district, and the transition to zoning this year, regardless of the initiative in November, is zoning into five for the current district, Desert Hot Springs to west of Cook Street.
Thank you.
Hey, Jeff Rosenberg, Desert Hot Springs resident. Question, how is the snowbirds affected us in the population? I know they're not counted in the census, but I know during the winter season, where our hospitals are impacted with more snowbirds and other things are. So how is that figured into this?
Justin, go ahead.
Especially if we know where we're more likely to see more snowbirds, you could help us identify those communities where we know there are more. We could take that into account in terms of over underpopulating districts, or maybe making sure those neighborhoods have more than one representative so that you don't feel a trap. But actually, we come back to the 2010 census. That's where you were counted is where your numbers go. And so communities with fewer snowbirds often will show up more with more people on here. And so we rely on you to help tell us, where those communities are and what that means, whether or not they should be kept together, whether they should be divided.
But Justin, I think he has a more specific question than that. Is the census in 2010 or 2020, when it is a snowbird, is it based on where you physically are during the census, or is it where your home is, so that if you have a home for 4 months in Palm Springs, but your home is in North Dakota, are you counted in North Dakota or are you counted in the Palm Springs census?
You're counted where you send in your card.
Right, it's like absentee ballot.
And that's the truth of it. Now, you don't want to get too technical, but if you send in your card from a location, that's where you're counted. So most snowbirds we see don't turn it in from their vacation home. They turn it in from the city that they consider home. You know, oftentimes not their house in the Southwest, but their house elsewhere.
What time of the year is the census done?
April 1st. And the census people who are kind of do the census pretty much, it's supposed to be April 1st is when you turn your card in. Most of the time, when they have to go out house by house, they do that over the summer.
Yep.
Fall and July.
Go, question here. I'll be translating.
Mi nombre es Cristina, vengo del área de Inverva. Desde ahora que se hubo una gran expansión de lo que es el distrito, me gustaría que en eso se agregara tema, coche, de este tema, Sarkozy.
Hi, my name is Lisela Barrera, and I'm here representing the city or the area of Thermal. But with the Lumen expansion, we would like to see other areas added on, such as Mecca, Thermal.
And I think if you want to explain back that that's post expansion as opposed to pre.
Alejandro, before you do that, can you hand me the mic, please?
Just so that everybody's on same playing field. Because there's an expansion election this November, and the East Valley voters vote on that expansion, one part of that law says that if expansion passes, the Desert Healthcare District Board, next December or January likely, will appoint two residents of the East Valley to join the board. So the Desert Healthcare District Board, if expansion goes through, will grow from 5 members to 7 members. The law also requires at that point, there would be, like you're doing now, there would be a redistricting in 2020 for the 7 districts. And then as Justin said, because of census in 2021, the lines would be drawn again. So that means that the transition is to 5 zones this year in the current district. It could be after November 6th, redistricting to 7 in 2020, and then redistricting again for the 7 in 2022. So today, again, for the purposes of this, it's the transition to the West Valley-based district.
And just to make it even more complicated, so these zones that are going to be 40,000 now, when the district expands into 7, but a population of 450,000, the zones will each be 50 to 60,000,
a little larger.
So they're going to be, the lines are going to be very different.
Thank you, sir.
There was there and then Marjorie.
Marjorie, please. Appreciate Ranger Mirage. I'm curious as to how it will be decided which of the 5 new zones, which 2 of the 5 new zones will be up for election.
Yeah, that's a great question. Which 2 zones will be up? And a lot of that depends on which council's board members end up in which zone. Because under the principle of minimizing that impact on the current district, then what we generally do is if there is just a zone where there's only one board member, and that board member has a particular term. We put that zone up in that board member cycle. Now, each of the maps, when they're published on June 12th, or June 8th, it's June 12th, will have an assignment or an idea of what the election year sequence would be. So you'll have at least an idea. Now, the board has complete control to change that, modify that, but we'll at least have some idea of what that will look like.
But we know there will be two seats up this year.
Up in 20 this year, and there'll be three up next year. That will not change as a result of any of this, even the expansion of the seven. That will not change this particular
thing. Right.
My question was, how do you decide which two?
The board decides.
Got it. The board decides
based on all of the input, and there is sort of a deference given to if there is, say, a board member who lives somewhere and has a term up, it's potentially likely that that district would get chosen. To do that.
Thank you.
I think Marjorie.
Hi, Marjorie again. I had a quick question on this. I guess this on page 7 of the second PowerPoint, it says no concentration of Asian American or African American population. Does that mean just in Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs, there's no concentration?
No, that means throughout the district. One of the reasons that we wanted to look at everyone is Desert Highland Gateway. It's a very big question and issue that we wanted to ask you in the neighborhood, because some people have suggested to us that Desert Hot Springs and Desert Highland Gateway should be together, or should Palm Springs continue to have, or should it be another? So a question sort of back is, you know, where is your neighborhood of interest, and where, given the size, you might want to be. But that concentration of Asian Americans, African Americans, and all district wide.
Okay. Okay, and then I wanted to know that when you're passing, you say it does go through, this will be so that the areas that you serve will be increased. That the areas that say are not eligible for grants or whatever will be eligible for stuff that you provide if they're added.
That's in the expansion election in November, which East Valley voters. This is specifically the current district, where you live and where your home becomes based in one of the five zones.
Okay, and then the last thing is that some of the stuff that you're deciding is going to be along with the census that they have every 10 years, and then some of it is going to be every other year or whatever.
No, it is all based on census. This one will be based on the 2010 census, but then when you move on to 2020, it'll be based on the latest numbers.
Okay.
So once we get past the 2020 census, it'll be once every 10 years following the census. That is when every single city, county, school district, special district, the state of California, everyone has to redraw boundaries following the census.
Oh, okay.
And so that once, right now it's a little complicated because with the expansion there's potentially several districting processes. But once it gets settled down, it'll be once every 10 years following the census. Any questions from the comments?
I thought, yeah, one right there.
Yeah.
So is there a reason?
Please announce your name and your.
Sorry, Jeff Osmer, again, resident of Desert Hot Springs. So since we're redistricting again in 2021, and then another time maybe possibly with the expansion, that's three different redistricting. How expensive is each redistricting? And is there a reason why we're not waiting until 2021 since we're so close to the next census?
Good question.
That's a question that you want to answer, Les, or would you like to?
Darren, I got
it. Oh. So about 2 months ago, we received a letter from an attorney representing California Voting Rights Group saying that we were one of the electing bodies that was doing at-large elections, and that at-large elections make it less likely for minority populations to be elected. And that if you have districts, especially when you have districts with a higher proportion of minority voters, so that they actually become a majority in those smaller districts, they have more of an opportunity to be elected. So we, unfortunately, the way the law works is we either had to say yes, or we had to really begin a protracted and very expensive legal fight, even to postpone it until after the expansion election. And then you're right, we have to then do it again in for the 2022 election on a different kind of basis. So that's the sort of short answer. Would our legal scholar like to add anything to that?
No, I think you covered it very well.
Thank you.
I think I will say there's one other thing. I think to the board's credit, the discussion was how do you best serve the communities that make up the current district and the future. And so it was an easy decision for the board as opposed to waiting in 2020, because we would have been in protracted legal basis. So go ahead and do it. And to answer your question, it's approximately about $50,000 if you're using NDC for the work that we're doing, and certainly there'll be a full accounting of it.
Any other questions? Any other comments about your neighborhood, communities of interest? Even if you don't want to comment today, I really do hope that all of you will check out the district's website and check out that public participation kit. There are so many ways to turn in your feedback. And I want to emphasize, we want everything, whether it's just, you know, this is my little street, this is my little area that I know a lot about that needs something very specific, to I have all five districts mapped out in my head and I want to see if this works. We'll take whatever you give us. And the earlier you get it to us, the more we have a chance to work with you.
This is the map that Justin had up that is on our website, dhcd.org. It's in English and Spanish. And hopefully many of you are far more talented artistically than I am. But what I've done just in sort of deciding is, what we're really saying is fine, take a pencil or take a pen and just circle the areas that you think should make up a zone. So as one person recommended, you know, I'm recommending Desert Hot Springs stay whole, but I think that Desert Hot Springs and Desert Highland Gateway have a lot in common. So I'm gonna remember that each district has to have 39,400 people. So you could print out, or if you don't have a printer, come to the office, we'll print it out for you, and you could say, I have five different ideas for maps. I'll keep Palm Springs together, I'll separate Palm Springs, I want Rancho and Palm Desert together, however you think it should be done. So it's got one page of directions in English or Spanish, and then this map. And we you know, if you've got artistic talent, that's great. I don't. I'm just using circles to show, you know, I barely know the streets. So that's the type of input that we're looking for you.
Just an example, Cathedral City has what population?
53,000.
51. So the district is only, or the zone is only going to be about 40. So one of the things we want to hear from the people in Cathedral City is, do you want to divide it in half and be in two districts? Do you want to have most of it in one district? Do you want to have the southern part in one district, the northern part in one district? Those are questions that we want people to address.
I mean, do you want to be with Rancho? Do you want to be with Palm Springs? Do you want to come into unincorporated territory? There's any numbers of combinations.
And I just have to emphasize that, you know, if you're not up there, if you just want to say, like, this is my neighborhood, this is my community, this is them as well.
Great, thank you. Thank you all for coming. I'm Carol Rogers, and I am on the board, and I live in Desert Healthcare District, and I would welcome any of you to meet me at Starbucks and discuss your ideas. I'll leave my card here on the table. Thank you. Oh, I live in Desert Hot Springs. You got it. Okay, all right.
I already have one here.
All right, we have two more.
Because I'm sitting right here.
Hang on, talk to Jack.
What do we need? Agenda?
No.
My name is Matt Kernskill, and I'm currently with Exxon neighborhood, but I also live in Cathedral City. And I think that it would benefit Cathedral City if we stayed together, but if we were split between some of the unincorporated area and Cathedral City, it would be better than splitting it up with Palm Springs.
Thank you very much for your comment.
Great.
We want to thank everybody for coming. You will have an opportunity to get the maps, as we said, on the website. The website is
dhct.org. The other thing to mention, we've done it a couple of times, is the maps that are produced by Justin and his team will be 3 to 5 options. Those do not have to be the ones that get adopted by the board. They're 3 to 5 options, but they're real options to start the dialogue again with the public. So on June 12th, at the latest, you'll be able to access the maps. On June 19th and June 26th will be the opportunities to provide input, but the district board will vote on June 26th on which version of the map. So many of you might have, I heard, live in Cathedral City. Cathedral City, I don't know how many maps they had, but they had a lot of maps. And so your input really, really counts on that.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks.
Did you adjourn the meeting? Thank you.